Over the Edge, The Canyon by Bus by Larry Vardaman. Bus tours, by their nature, tend to offer less dramatic experiences than the raft or backpacking groups encounter. Few participants on the bus tours come in contact with wild animals or face dangerous circumstances or severe weather conditions. However, several interesting situations have occurred, which have not only challenged the spiritual maturity of our group, but have also been found to be humorous upon reflection. Some of the members of our bus tours have physical limitations of one kind or another. Some have high blood pressure or a heart problem and have to watch their activities. Others may have a bad leg or a bad back. One year, we were able to take a lady who was confined to a wheelchair. These limitations have not prevented our guests from enjoying most of the activities planned for the bus tour. Since about 1990, the Grand Canyon Tour has begun at a hotel in Phoenix, Arizona, with registration on Friday night, followed by an orientation on Saturday morning and a Mexican buffet at noon before heading to the canyon. The lobby of the hotel is like a family reunion on Friday night, as many old friends return for another tour. Many of our guests have taken one of our other tours or have attended one of our conferences around the United States or abroad and know many of us and each other. New guests participating in the Grand Canyon Tour for the first time find themselves easily incorporated into this friendly atmosphere. On Saturday morning, one of the first accomplishments is to get all the luggage stacked near the hotel entrance so it can be loaded on the buses during the orientation. For the last few years, we've had 3 full-size tour buses leaving Phoenix. It's astounding to see how much luggage is required for about 150 guests, including backpacks, boxes of books, folding chairs for guests at the rim on Sunday afternoon, and suitcases. Each bus carries 55 people, so there's typically over 100 pieces of luggage per bus. When it's all piled up in front of the hotel, it looks like the U.S. Army is billeted there. We've only lost a few pieces of luggage during all the years of the Grand Canyon Tour, and those were eventually found. 4 boxes of books were lost one year at the hotel in Flagstaff, but were eventually returned about 6 months later. The most humorous incident occurred when dropping off guests at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix at the end of our tour in 1994. Carolyn Albright was scheduled to fly back to England early Monday morning following the tour, so had placed her suitcase in the cargo hold of her bus to return to the hotel with her on Sunday evening. When we got to the hotel and it didn't show up, she paged Tom Manning, the tour coordinator at the airport, where he was waiting with part of her family for a flight to San Diego. Tom sent his son to look for the suitcase on the curb outside the airport, but he was unable to locate it. Tom called the hotel in Flagstaff to see if it had been left behind. Calls to the concierge at the hotel in Phoenix and to the bus companies didn't help. Finally, just as Tom's flight was about to leave, he called Carolyn again at her hotel and was told that her suitcase had just arrived. Apparently, the suitcase had been unloaded from the bus and left standing on the curb outside the airport. Before Tom's son got to the street to look for it, a baggage clerk from the airport had found it and arranged for it to be delivered to the hotel. Since that incident, we now have one of our staff remain overnight in Phoenix to handle any last-minute problems for our guests. Most bus tours contain interesting people, and the fellowship is a special part of the tour experience. In fact, the most frequent comment expressed on our survey taken at the end of each tour is how great the fellowship was. We begin each tour with introductions by all participants. On the way from Phoenix to the Grand Canyon, each person is given the opportunity to give a 2 or 3 minute statement about why they're on the tour and to add any special information they wish to share with the entire group. Almost everyone is willing to speak briefly over the intercom. Some are more willing and give 5 to 10 minutes. It's a great way to get the tour started and find out about our neighbors on the tour. Tom Manning has introduced a fun reminder for those who tend to be late returning to the bus after a sightseeing activity or other event. He awards a child's play clock to hang around the neck of the latest person returning to the bus. That person gets to wear it until the next time someone's late. This minor but humorous embarrassment reminds us all to be on time and not delay the others. There's usually one person who wears it most of the time. The start of each day is begun with a short devotional, singing, and a period of prayer. Typically, the devotional is given by one of the staff on a topic related to the sites for the day. Occasionally, one of the guests is asked to bring a devotional or a testimony as well. The singing is a special event on our tours. None of us are professionals, but the groups often have excellent singers, and the choruses and hymns really sound great driving through the beautiful scenery often encountered in Arizona. We schedule our arrival at the Grand Canyon on Saturday afternoon in time to see a 45-minute movie at the IMAX Theater before viewing the sunset from Mather Point. The movie gives some of the history of the Grand Canyon, including a reenactment of Native American culture before the arrival of the white man. My favorite scenes are the ones filmed from an ultralight airplane flying down into the narrow canyons along and just above the river, and over the crags and ledges of the canyon. I often jokingly suggested that we need to create a fourth group for our tours that will fly ultralight aircraft through the canyon. Unfortunately, this is not possible because flight below the rim of the canyon is now forbidden, except in the case of an emergency. After viewing the IMAX film, our group travels to Mather Point and views the sunset, if the weather cooperates. Some of our guests have never seen the Grand Canyon before, and this first view is always an exciting experience for them. This vast depression in the earth can never be adequately captured on film. The beautiful blue, red, and green colors, shapes of the buttes and monuments, and the incredible magnitude of the canyon itself all lend a special aura to the place. On Sunday morning, we normally attend worship service at Grand Canyon Baptist Church. This is a Southern Baptist church which meets in the beautiful Shrine of the Ages Chapel. It has a beautiful window on one wall, which looks outward to the ponderosa pine forest covering the rim. On most years, one of our leaders has been asked to be the morning speaker. Several friends attend this church, including Ron and Sue Clayton, who operate the mule concession for the park. After church, all three buses travel out to one of the overlooks on the east end of the Grand Canyon for a short series of mini lectures. For the last few years, we've been conducting these lectures at an overlook near Desert View Tower. From here, the entire group can see both the strata of the Kaibab upwarp and the lower desert to the east, where we believe large lakes were impounded before the Grand Canyon was eroded. Several of the tour leaders give short talks about the canyon from this vantage point. In 1987, in addition to the standard technical lectures, Dave McQueen organized a special lecture at this point in the program. He coerced several medical doctors who were guests on the tour to dress up in surgical gowns, which he had brought along for the occasion, and operate on a patient in front of the assembled group. He equipped each doctor with standard surgical tools, draped the table with surgical coverings, and even had headlamps for some of them. While the doctors operated on the patient, Dave described several symptoms the patient was having, which were couched in geological terms. For the punchline, one of the doctors, identified as Dr. Rock, finally located the problem by pulling a large stone from an incision in the patient. At the end of the many lectures, the three buses then head in different directions. The backpackers return to Grand Canyon Village to prepare for their trek into the canyon. The rafters travel to Page, Arizona for one last night of comfort before embarking on their voyage down the Colorado River. And the bus tour group begins a five-day visit to Zion and Bryce Canyon National Parks and other nearby scenic locations. Before separating for the remainder of the week, the rafters and bus groups have lunch together at the Cameron Trading Post on the way to Page, Arizona. There are two unique features to this stop. First, this is probably one of the best locations for Indian jewelry in Arizona. It has the largest selection of silver, jade, turquoise, and other keepsakes found anywhere. The bus group stops here twice and has the opportunity to look the first time and buy on the second visit. This Cameron Trading Post has the biggest, most delicious taco you will find on the trip. You can order the Navajo taco, which completely covers a large plate, or you can order half of a Navajo taco. John Morris likes these tacos so much that he describes most of the geological formations to the bus group in terms of the Navajo taco. If you order one, however, be careful of the hot sauce. By the time the bus group finally heads towards Zion National Park, the people begin to recognize one another and form closer fellowships. As we hike along the trails together at Zion and Bryce Canyon and fellowship together on the bus, the bonds become even closer. Many friendships have developed on our bus tours. Part of the bonding occurs because of the devotionals and singing on the bus. Several of the leaders take turns leading devotionals in the singing, but John Morris is probably best known for his gracious encouragement with old-time songs, which aren't sung in churches much anymore. He particularly likes songs based on geological terms like rocks and sand and mountains. At the end of the week, when the rafters and backpackers rejoin the bus tour for our victory banquet in Flagstaff, the singing reaches a special crescendo. It may be that the individual groups have become accustomed to the smaller sound of their own group, but when they come together in the larger group, the amplified and closed sound of the total group makes an incredible impact. Maybe it's just that practice makes perfect. At any rate, each year, I am overwhelmed emotionally when the whole group sings together. I'm particularly partial to singing Majesty and How Great Thou Art at our victory banquet. Prayer on the bus tour also has special meaning. Many people come on our tours who have needs that they can't share easily with friends and loved ones at home. Our tour is a very non-threatening group of loving Christians from all over the United States and around the world. Sometimes it's easier to share some very deep personal need with someone you aren't likely to see again than it is with your best friend. We always have people on our tours who reach out in love and concern to someone who has needs and deep hurts. We've had many who've recently lost spouses and loved ones. We've had parents who are concerned for their children. We've had pastors who've been treated badly by their churches. We almost always have a few who are not believers but are searching. Members of the bus tour group almost invariably wrap their arms around those who are hurting and pray for them during the week. Many times these relationships continue for many years after the tour. A few couples have even gotten married because of the acquaintance they've made on our tour. The bus tour doesn't allow the participants as much time in the Grand Canyon as the rafters or backpackers, but this limitation is compensated for by travel to many other locations near the Grand Canyon. Some of the places visited during the past 10 years are Zion National Park, Bryce Canyon National Park, Lake Powell, Rainbow Bridge, Kodachrome Basin, Petrified Forest, the Painted Desert, Sunset Crater, Meteor Crater, and Walnut Canyon. These are opportunities for short hikes at each of these locations. At some, horseback and helicopter rides can be arranged. For the last few years, the entire bus tour has been able to travel on a raft down the Colorado River from near the foot of Glen Canyon Dam to Lee's Ferry, where the rafters start their trip. Although only small rapids occur on this stretch of the river, the high canyon walls, Indian petroglyphs, and good fishing give a first-time visitor a real exposure to what running the river would be like. The final events on the last day of our Grand Canyon tour are always bittersweet. After Sunday morning services in Flagstaff, the buses head towards Phoenix via Oak Creek Canyon and Sedona, Arizona. Although Sedona is a typical Western tourist town, the scenery in and around the town is anything but typical. The red rocks, which have been eroded, form all kinds of shapes. Oak Creek Canyon contains magnificent scenery. Between sheltering crimson cliffs, pine, and oak-shaded glens alternate with grassy meadows as the creek trickles downstream. Driving through this canyon at the end of a week at the Grand Canyon, Zion and Bryce, winds the emotions down so that one can face the thought of returning to worldly cares. One can keep the tranquil image of Oak Creek Canyon tucked away in the recesses of his mind as a refuge to which he can return if present cares become too great. After lunch on that last day, the return to Phoenix only takes about 2 hours. The buses drive directly to the airport, where most but a guest take planes home the same day. Sometimes this departure will take our participants by surprise. If you take our tour, I suggest that you prepare yourself for that sudden separation from the group. If you don't, you'll feel like someone pushed you out the front door of his house and closed the door. One moment, you're enjoying the remnants of a week of fantastic scenery and fellowship, and the next, you're standing alone on the curb of Sky Harbor Airport, surrounded by hot desert air and the noise of hundreds of buses, cars, and planes. If you want to take a more leisurely return to civilization, stay on the bus and return to the hotel in Phoenix for one last night before returning home. About a third of our guests choose to stay overnight. I've done it, and I highly recommend it.